We'd like to thank Cassiopeia Books for sponsoring Voices and Views. They are located at 606 Central Avenue in downtown Great Falls. Besides being a place to find your favorite books, they also host events with authors, book clubs, and local groups weekly. For special orders or more information, you can reach them at 315-1515.
Welcome to Voices and Views on Great Falls Public Radio. I'm your host, Thomas Risberg, and today I have the pleasure of welcoming Elizabeth Moore, the Executive Director of the Lewis and Clark Foundation, to the show. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you, Thomas. I'm glad to be here.
So let's jump right in. I've discussed a lot on the show this emerging culture of contempt that I see in the United States, that we don't take the time to understand who people are as people, what their values are, where they come from, how they've been molded into the person they are today. So I like to ask all my guests just a little bit about their background. So where were you born, Elizabeth?
I was born in Pittsburgh, actually, and migrated to Texas when I was 7.
Okay, so you're growing up in Pittsburgh. What's the great food in Pittsburgh? They've dumplings.
Dumplings, and then there's some sandwich place there that is really famous.
It's pierogies.
That's what it is.
The pierogies. I love saying that. So you moved to Texas at 7, and what was it like growing up in Texas? West Texas, big city?
Austin. Austin is, they call it the live music capital of the world for a reason. It was amazing growing up there.
And so with your parents, what are things that stick out to you that built up the value system that you have today?
My mother was a stay-at-home mom. My dad worked for Sperry Univac, and he fixed computers all day long. And so we grew up in a fairly comfortable home with really good values. I was brought up in the Episcopal Church, and then went to college. I was a journalism major. My uncle was the editor of a small town newspaper in Kansas, and so it just kind of fit in.
That's terrific. So what's the name of the newspaper in Kansas?
Marion County Record.
I love it.
Yep.
And so I just want to give our listeners a little bit of background before we get to the great things you've done at the Lewis and Clark Foundation. I know you worked for a long time for Dell, right?
I did, for 11 years doing websites.
So did that come from your family? I love that there's vacuums and it was dealing with computers. That tells you it's back in the day, right?
It does. You know, I fell into it. I went to work for Dell actually at the front desk in the HR department one day, and they watched me on the computers and said, "Hey, you know, we've got this great website for HR, but nobody's maintaining it. Do you think you'd like to?" I said, "Well, I don't have any experience with that." And they said, "Well, we'll train you." So they did, and from then on, I was making the websites. I went into the home and home office division and did a lot of retail stuff for them. So
beautiful. That's a key part to success is showing up and being willing to take risks, right?
Absolutely.
So you do your time at Dell, and then is it a direct? Where do you get to Great Falls in your story?
We had friends who moved up here. So we came to visit, and the more we came to visit, the harder it got to go back. They lived in Livingston at the time. They moved up here, and we had not come to see them up here, but my friend Lee called me. She said, "You know, you made a list of everything that you would like to see in a house if you moved up here." I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, you're not going to believe this, but there's a house up here for sale, and it's pretty much everything that's on your list, and it's next door." So I was on the next plane out of Austin, came up by myself, took a look at the house, called my husband, said, "This is it. This is where we want to be." And we put an offer in the next day, and here we are. That was in 2000. Well, we bought the house in 2002 and couldn't move until 2005 because he had to retire from the state of Texas.
And you've been at the foundation pretty much ever since then, right?
No, I still worked for Dell. I was kind of the pilot for working from home with Dell. And then they had a reorg and reorged me out of the organization. So I went to work for Chinook Wireless for a year in the marketing department until they outsourced that and the company got bought out. And then I went to work for Big Sky Imprints and SignPro, which I eventually owned for about 4 years. I was a co-owner. And then while I was there, I joined Ad Club, which I miss terribly. I think everybody in town misses Ad Club. But I met a lot of really neat people. And one of those people introduced me to Jay Russell nine and a half years ago.
Our listeners, what was Ad Club?
Ad Club was an organization that, they were amazing. It was the movers and shakers in this town, and their primary focus was the Russell Auction. They created that.
Okay. And so it's just sort of got subsumed into the Russell Museum, and they didn't have that separate group.
Yeah, that's a long story. We don't want to get into that.
It would be an interesting one. Maybe better for the hour-long interview
that
segment.
That might be an interview for Norma.
Absolutely. So we're listeners are referring to Norma Ashby Smith, who we'll have on our next show here in 2 weeks, talking about a whole range of events coming up. But nice. Let's dive in now to the Interpretive Center first, because I want to make sure folks in Great Falls understand how important the center is to the vitality of our economy, to tourism. So can you just give us some headline stats on, you know, when was the Interpretive Center built? The, you know, how large is it? The amount of exhibition space we have? And then how many people are coming here on an annual basis?
So it opened in 1998. In fact, we will be celebrating the 25th anniversary next year. So look for that. We're going to have a big blowout party. It's an amazing place. It absorbs you. The whole story of the Lewis and Clark expedition is so fascinating. If you're not familiar with it, I highly encourage you to get out there and take a look. The center itself is the most visited attraction in central Montana. In a normal year, we bring in excess of 50,000 people to the center, which of course translates to a lot of funding for the community in tourism dollars. The center is not a museum, it's an interpretive center. And by definition, it's hands-on. You know, we've got kids, little kids, who love to come out there because there's so much for them to do. It's all hands-on. There's stuff they can dress up as the people from the expedition. They can play with the furs down there. They've got all kinds of really neat interactive exhibits.
And I was shocked at the worldwide reach that the center has in terms of attracting tourists. You talk about there's people you get every day, right, that are speaking Mandarin, Korean, all the European languages, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Australia, Taiwan, Japan, all over Europe. We get them from all over the world. And it's a destination. It's not an incidental. People are coming specifically to see the Lewis and Clark expedition.
Absolutely. That it is the but for reason that they're coming here to Great Falls. It's not a stopover.
Right.
So we've got this incredible interpretive center. And of course, like any gem, right, we need to polish it. We need to keep it in good shape. Tell me the purpose of the foundation.
So since the Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center is owned by the Forest Service, it is a government entity. As such, there is a lot that they are not allowed to buy. There's a lot that they're not allowed to do. They cannot run a gift shop, for example. And so we do that for them. They cannot solicit funding from the public, and we can. So when they come up with a need, for example, Dwayne Buschai is our educational coordinator, and Dwayne does a lot of classes for kids all over Montana. In fact, we have, I think, 18 schools booked in right now to come and further their education. But some of the supplies that he needs for those classes, they can't pay for those. So we step in and we get grants or sponsorships, and we take care of that.
And then I do want our listeners to understand the staffing, because it has really shrunk in terms of the number of folks that they have to operate that center. Can you give us a flavor of, you know, when it was opening in 1998 versus today, what the staffing looks like there?
When the center opened, I believe there were probably close to 20 full-time employees, including the interpreters and the behind-the-scenes staff, the administrative staff. We're down to 3.5.
Yeah, I remember when I heard that. That is unbelievable how much they're able to get done with 3.5 full-time employees. That you go from 20 to 3.5, and you're expected to maintain, you know, same hours, same level of service, right? And it really puts a lot of stress on it, which has been an area where the foundation is able to support. Can you talk about some of the support they've given to make sure, as that staff reduction has happened, that we still are able to have the full, you know, Lewis and Clark experience?
Right. So we have stepped in and we fund a couple of seasonal employees through the year. The seasonal employees are interpreters. So we have someone out at the front desk to help the people when they come in. Austin Haney is one of the gentlemen that we employ periodically. Austin has worked for the foundation since he was about 15 years old and is now a college graduate and just does a phenomenal job.
The other one I want to make sure that our listeners know about is getting back on that education. We have the programs at the center, but there's a big issue with cost, right, about having kids be able to come to the center to take advantage of the programs that are offered, but also they'd have to cover a substitute teacher in these rural communities to be able to have, you know, the people that can't come covered, right, when they're coming out for the field trip. So talk about what the foundation is doing to try to reduce those barriers and allow more school children to be able to access the center.
Definitely. There are a lot of underfunded and underprivileged schools in Montana. And so the foundation has decided to establish a $250,000 scholarship program so that those underprivileged and underfunded schools are able to do that. And yeah, you're right, it pays for substitute teachers, it pays for transportation, whatever it takes to get those kids here so that they can have the same experience that the schools that have a lot of money are being able to provide for those kids.
It is one of those experiences where you can change someone's life trajectory, right? A lot of people that are involved in the Forest Service, let's say, you know, you'll ask them, where did you get that wonder about getting out into the outdoors and getting involved in this as a career? And almost to a man, they'll have some seminal experience. And so I love programs like this where you can give kids, not just in a book, right, but where they can really come in and be enthralled by everything that happened in that period.
Absolutely. And it's not just the Lewis and Clark experience that we teach. He's got programs on natural sciences as well.
And I do want, because there are so many different Native tribes that are along the route that Lewis and Clark took. That's been the most fascinating thing. I've been to the Interpretive Center numerous times, but that it tells the story of all the tribes, right? I mean, that's a big part of the exhibit space.
Absolutely, it is.
So I do think our listeners should understand that, you know, you don't want to pigeonhole it, right? That it is the only center, I believe, that follows the whole expedition, right? It doesn't just focus on what happened when they were in a particular place.
Right, right.
But that it's also even more expansive than that, that it covers all the cultures and the wildlife and you know, fauna and flora along the route.
Yeah. Well, it was so important to Thomas Jefferson that the expedition cover all of that information. They sent back animals, they sent back plants, and they cataloged so many things that had never been seen before.
That's the thing I found fascinating. I always thought that it was to try to find a Northwest Passage to get, you know, over to the Pacific, but it actually had far more, you know, expansive of a purpose, right?
It did indeed.
And I personally love Lewis and Clark, and we have an opportunity coming up as a community to support what's going on at the foundation. And I want you to talk a little bit about the trail mixer coming up.
We have the 17th annual trail mixer This year, once again, it will be online just because of COVID. And it's pretty exciting, actually. We've got over 200 items on the website right now. If you go to lewisandclarkfoundation.org and you click on the button that says Trail Mixer, you'll get right to it. You can register now. Get on there. Take a look. There's a trip to Maui. There are several other trips. There's, gosh, packages for everybody, for every budget.
I've been on and perused it. I know there's a trip on the Missouri, right, that you can get kind of the white cliffs of the Missouri in. Do you have any other, you know, kind of signature items, things that stand out that our listeners might say, oh, wow, I got to take a look at that?
Oh, my gosh. Well, like I say, there are several trips. There's one to Flagstaff. There's one to Wyoming, several around Montana. So you can get out and see your own state. You know, a lot of us just take that for granted. We don't get out and see our own backyard. Lots of other packages that there's some art. There's some beautiful art. We have a statue of a Native American in prayer that's just beautiful. Get on there. Take a look, really.
And it is all categorized, right? So it's not overwhelming. You can pick, you know, I want to look at food. I want to look at trips, right?
Yes, it is.
That's wonderful. And so you've got the Trail Mixer coming up. And can you give our listeners one more time the date that it will start and run through, and then also the website where they can go on and start looking today?
Yep, you can get on there today, start looking, get registered. Bidding starts on April 19th and ends on the 22nd.
So it's a pretty short window. You got those 3 days, so you want to get on there and be ready to start bidding when it opens.
Absolutely.
And then one thing that has been a big community event for a long time, and I know that preparations already getting going, that the foundation organizes, is the Lewis and Clark Festival.
Right.
And so can you tell us a little bit about where the planning has gone on that?
The festival is, it's been in existence long before the center was ever even built. Our honor guard has been functional in that they are our reenactors. And so they put together programs that teach you how things were done on the expedition, which is really cool because you get to see them do all the cooking and you can taste food like they would have tasted. They talk about the firearms. There's a firearm presentation. And they'll shoot the guns over the Missouri. It's pretty cool. And then we have Thomas Jefferson reenactor coming this year. Some of you will remember him. He's been here before. It's been a few years ago. But he'll be here Friday and Saturday, actually. And this is June 17th and 18th. So June 17th, we'll have a special dinner and a meet and greet at the Celtic Cowboy down in the Dark Horse. Details will be posted as soon as they're available. And again, on the lewisandclarkfoundation.org website. But this man is incredible. You will literally think that you are sitting right there in the room with Thomas Jefferson. And he does not break character. He is absolutely insane.
Those are my favorite people, that they fully inhabit it. And Jefferson, as an intellectual, I think is unmatched among the founding fathers. I think it was Kennedy, right, where he has all the Nobel laureates at the White House. And he says, you know, this is the greatest gathering of minds at the White House since Thomas Jefferson dined alone.
There you go.
So I highly encourage people to look up for that when it comes on the Lewis and Clark Foundation website. And then can you give a little more? I know the ones that there's something involving snakes, right, that's being done. I remember that last year and I was like, that sounds awesome. I'm big into wildlife.
Yeah. Jeremy Alistad he's a professional snake relocator. So if you have snake problems, or if you've ever called because you've got a rattlesnake in your windowsill or something, he's probably the one who's come out and taking care of it for you. But he does. He shows up at festival, and he's got several of the native species in Montana. And he lets the kids play with them and touch them. And it's absolutely fascinating.
And then I've always, you know, when I go to the festival, I feel like the teepees stand out to me. And there is a big component about Native American culture, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, Lewis and Clark probably would never have made it if it hadn't been for Sacagawea. And, of course, she was a Shoshone. There were several other tribes, local tribes, that that are still coming. We have, sometimes we have the Blackfeet, sometimes we have the Little Shell Chippewa. This year we have a Salish Kootenai dancer coming, and he is a fancy dancer. He's bringing his son and another student. So I highly encourage you to come out and see him. He's amazing. He has danced all over the world. So come see.
Oh, wow. That's terrific. And so I want to spend the last bit of our time. I follow the foundation on Facebook, and you guys always are giving just incredible little nuggets about the expedition. And so could you give me, you know, I know you've studied this for years, but some maybe lesser known stories about Lewis and Clark, either as people or the expedition, that give us a real insight into who they were.
Well, they were military men. Jefferson knew who to pull in. He and Lewis were great friends, and Lewis and Clark were great friends, so Lewis pulled in Clark. Then they put together the rest of the team based on what their skills were. So they needed somebody who was a good fisherman. They needed a couple of good hunters. Lewis himself actually studied medicine before they left, so they would have some sort of physician in the Corps. So, and then of course they had a dog. A lot of people don't realize that, but they did. They had a Newfoundland. His name was Seaman, and Lewis paid $20 for him. Bought him in Pittsburgh. That was a lot of money back then. We don't know for sure if he made it through the whole trip, but we think he did, because if they had anything significant happen, they talked about it in the journals. But at one point, he did get stolen from the Corps, and Lewis sent the whole Corps after the dog, said, "You go get my dog back." And so they did.
The Great Falls, right, and what our city namesake is of course, a series of falls, not just one, right here, you know, outside of town. And, you know, they all have dams now, but tell us about the portage, because I think that's what really makes this unique as a place along the trail that they had to do to get around these falls.
So they had some idea that they were going to encounter falls, but they had no idea that there were five. When Lewis came across them, he was just blown away. They spent more time here at Great Falls than they did anywhere else along the trail except where they wintered, just because it took so long to portage those canoes and all of their supplies around the falls.
It is incredible that they just came out here and all of a sudden there's five waterfalls. I want to give our listeners a chance if they want to learn more. Do you have a few books? I know there's a bazillion of them that are particularly well written and sort of delve into the expedition in a way that's authentic and that you would recommend.
Absolutely. And we do carry them in the store at the Interpretive Center. The first one I would recommend would be the Lewis and Clark in Central Montana by Ella Mae Howard. Ella Mae was a Great Falls lady. She was an amazing historian, and the book is specific to our area. So if you just want to get a feel of the portage and how things went while they were here, that would be the one to get. If you're looking for something that is more general, The Way to the Western Sea is actually the book that our interpreters have to read before they can become interpreters. And then, of course, there is Undaunted Courage, which is the book that everybody has read about Lewis and Clark.
That's the Stephen Ambrose, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And he is a terrific author. I think the D-Day is his other famous book that I know of. But yeah. Undaunted Courage is the definition of a page-turner. And then tell me about, because it's just the scale of it. And you guys have it available at the store. There are the diaries of, is it Lewis or Clark?
It's all of them. All the journals were transposed. Dr. Gary Moulton did that. He was one of very few people ever allowed to even touch the journals themselves. It's 13 volumes. The first one is actually an atlas that contains all the maps that they drew. And then the next ones, they're divided into areas. But it's extensive reading. Yeah.
The scholarship behind that is incredible. Gary's been out here multiple times, right?
He certainly has. In fact, he was here last year for festival, and he was promoting his new book called Day by Day, which is more of a diary format. So he took all of the information and he picked the most pertinent or the most entertaining entries and formatted into a day by day account of the expedition.
Okay, so it's basically the abridged version if you don't have 2,000 hours to read the 13-volume set.
Exactly.
All right, I appreciate that on Gary's part. So a question that is only quasi-related to Lewis and Clark and the Foundation, but I do ask all my guests, and I want to give you an opportunity to answer, is about our community writ large. And I just want to get your perspective. Is there anything when you think of Great Falls in our community that you would really love, if you had that magic wand and you could change one thing about our community, what would that be?
I think from a selfish perspective, it would be that I would want everybody in town to come out and see what this place has to offer. Because as someone who grew up in Texas and got maybe one page of Lewis and Clark in my history books, I never fully appreciated what they accomplished.
Absolutely. And so give me, I love talking about values, and what are three values that you think if our listeners really delve into Lewis and Clark and the journey that they'll come away with? Like, what made this a success to come out here in the middle of nowhere, thousands of miles, and have, I think, all but one, right, make it back?
Yeah, all but one. And he, they think, had appendicitis. But perseverance, dedication, ambition.
Perseverance, dedication, ambition. I feel like these are timeless values, and I love and encourage our listeners to get out to fully experience the Lewis and Clark experience and to get a real connection with what these explorers accomplished. And so, Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming on. And as we leave, can you give our listeners one more time the dates for the Trail Mixer?
Trail Mixer, April 19th through the 22nd. And it's at lewisandclarkfoundation.org.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, Elizabeth.
Thomas, thank you for having me.
That was Elizabeth Moore, the executive director of the Lewis and Clark Foundation.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like more information about KGPR, please visit our website, kgpr.org, where you can find a link to donate, links to all of our other locally produced programming, and information about your local voice, KGPR Great Falls.
Voices and Views is brought to you in part by Advanced Litho Printing, with over 60 years of excellence in printing. From the smallest job to the largest jobs and anything in between, Advanced Litho has everything you need printing related. Advanced Litho, is family-owned and Great Falls-based. To find out more about all they offer, go to advancedlithoprinting.com or call them at 406-453-0393. And we thank them for supporting local public radio on KGPR.